that there's an obvious magnetic attraction or some very close binding attraction which causes these other substances to be attracted like iron filings to a magnet. Hold it there strongly, like the grip of a burr on your trousers.
How many birds do one kiss?
I don't think there's more than one to a face, or one and a half.
But one face will be up against the next cube, won't it?
No, I'm talking the outside.
Of the end face.
Mm. The end cube, where you directed my attention.
Well, it will have five free faces, right?
Yes.
And you think there's about a birth in each face?
Before I answer, I ought to tell you that the radial lines aren't a single cube. They are multiple cubes in parallel. So that a line might be two or three cubes thick. So that the end doesn't consist of one single cube only. It consists of whatever the end is. Now there will still, however, be so many faces outwards. Answer your question, it seems to me that there is at least that there is probably one burr to each face, but there are some clinging to the edges of the cube as well. It's not only to the face.
Now, just before we finish, do you think you could just look at a burr and just see?
AD 18. Much smaller rods, of course. Somewhat like the way the feathers are attached to an arrow, but more, because there are only two or three of those, but that's the arrangement, as far as I can see.
The rods revolving, are the feathers revolving?
First impression is of shooting and of force along these like feathers, like the quill are feathers, quills are feathers, rushing force. This particular atom, if it's an atom, is very dynamic, tremendously forceful and powerful, compared to the quieter, but of course inwardly very dynamic, but relatively quieter cube.
Would you say the Atlantean suggesting a brilliant sea around this?
A brilliant what?
Bead. Not a blind bag of vitality.
A bead.
Bag of vitality throughout your mind.
The whole thing is curious that I should have seen it all as dark. But now I come to focus onto a bird, now it's all brilliant light, white light. Quicksilver light. In retrospect, this whole experience since I came to the bar. The tape ran out and we missed my description which you wrote, but as I remember it, I was watching aggregations of the cubes of carbon in a compound, sugar. And I had noticed that at the ends of the lines of cubes, which went out from a central group of cubes, a kind of discoloration seemed to occur. On first examination, as directed, I saw that this was caused by the attachment to the outside of these cubes of other forms. These, at first, appeared like animalculae with spikes, rotifery, and that sort of thing. Then I saw that these were all, as it were, sucked close to the cubal mass and clung closely to it in between the radial lines, and that a single forms which I said resembled burrs, and we called burrs afterwards, clung about one to the face of a cube. Though it was irregular, and there were some that happened to to find out what these burrs were, and the first impression was of a rod of very dynamic electrical energy with lines of force flowing off, somewhat as do the feathers of an arrow. These were not feather-like, but like the quills alone might look. And these contributed to the spiky effect on the outside because they penetrated the body of this form, this atomic form. In between these, I next was attracted by the spirals of the oxygen atom, as I've seen them in occult chemistry. These are, and I am now looking and describing, as I try to see, these oxygen atoms impress me by their brilliance and by the fact that their edges aren't lines as drawn, but that round the outside of the spiral rods or cubes, there are numbers of Anu following the line of the spiral, as a, like a magnetic field, getting dragged along in the wake. Then, I saw then that the force which makes this atom, or is its source, is really welling up in the middle of it from a higher dimension. Jumps into existence in the middle of it out of nowhere, from the three-dimensional point of view, and then flows to form this ray, which I call a rod, and then shoots off from the sides of the rod, as I've described it. Curiously, the spirals of the oxygen are not connected with this, not the product of it, but have an independent existence, as far as I can judge. Then I began to see another kind of atoms, which were much less dynamic and seemed to consist of some 12 or so Anus grouped together round a central Anu, and perhaps enclosed in a kind of skin, which might be globular. 1.5 spiral.
That tell you? I mean, that tells you. The group is 16 or so.
Yes. Enable me to compare.
1.5 cells are they particular spirals?
Yes.
But the oxygen is much bigger than that.
That's what I mean. Yeah. But supposing there are 12 rounds or turns of the spiral, then and it happened that these were arranged lateral or vertically decided purposes of measurement, then each of these globules, whatever they are, would occupy about 1.5 rounds or part of the turns of the spiral.
How many of the spirals could make up the face of a cube?
Say tentatively, you better ask me another time when I'm fresh. But I believe that three spirals might be contained, one on top of the other, inside of this. That's only the length.
Just show me only the things which I seem to see can limit it. Yes, that's the kind of blurred pattern, that's the pattern I get.
Of what?
Well, I don't know, when I'm looking right in. You mean a witch of the three, do you? These are the sort of patterns I see. And all of this kind of thing.
Once I'm in focus, and once I'm really in there, then it doesn't matter if I leave. My consciousness remains in there, in this strange and mysterious realm of flowing forces, which is the atomic world.
Thank you.
But you see, I was feeling towards it that I decided some of the cubes being on that point. Discourage any serious inquirer
observation with very considerable power of concentration upon the subject under investigation without wavering for some considerable time. This means that the ego, the thinker, has, by meditation and self-training of the personality, the power to direct the mind unwaveringly into any field of thought and towards any object of concentration. This is only possible when the ego is involved and something of the real higher self of man takes an interest in the activities of the personality in this direction and assists by sending down some of the real power of the inner self. For example, there must be a considerable measure of the Atma as spiritual will applied during the periods of observation. That is the product of years and years of meditation, as far as I myself am concerned, in the small degree in which I possess this particular faculty. Then the consciousness must, I think, have been enlarged. By that I mean that a considerable measure of what is called universalization of consciousness must have occurred, meaning that the mind is capable of not only knowing intellectually, but experiencing to some extent the fact of unity, that amidst all the diversity of manifestations, all the myriad forms and the richness of individuality, everywhere apparent throughout all nature, there is one essence, call it what you will. And furthermore, that the inner essence of the self, of the observer, is a part thereof. He knows himself as one with the spirit essence in every other manifested being and thing. Or in theological terms, he has begun to experience unity with God, the hypostatic union. If you say, well, why does this religious experience need to enter into a purely scientific observation? You don't have to be spiritually minded to look through a microscope. True, but then the instrument of clairvoyant research is not a microscope. It's not an inanimate object at all. It is psychophysical, hypersensitive, sensitive to external forces, conditions and aspects in the astrological sense, insofar as they are external, sensitive to the health of the would-be seer, and above all, sensitive to the play of the inner the God self within. And it is this play of the superpersonal powers of the human ego which bestows upon the instrument of clairvoyant research its real power. Without this inner egoic empowerment and directive force and capacity to concentrate, the range of seership would be very limited. Auras might be seen, fairies might be seen, the etheric world, vitality globules, health aura, and even the interior of the body might all be seen at the etheric level. But when seer is operating with causal consciousness, deliberately directed down to whatever level, mental, astral, or etheric, at which he wishes to work. Now, this can't be done unless the person has achieved, through long years of meditation, a measure of faculty of functioning in the causal body whilst wide awake. Now, all of these factors enter in. Then, of course, there must have been a good deal of study. The person must know something about the subject or object to be investigated. He couldn't, for example, putting it all over simply for illustration, he could not investigate the atomic construction or the forms of atoms of any object unless he knew there were such things as atoms. And some little group of facts concerning atomic physics. So, then knowledge is necessary. Then, when the clairvoyant faculty begins to show itself, it has to be tested and retested. And retested. Until the observer has reasonable confidence in himself that under right conditions, and if he obeys the rules, he can see. For example, he